the show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
That's right, and we are here live once again. We welcome you back. It's another edition of the Bucket Strategy Investing Program, your source for the best in money information. I'm Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, joining me yet again from Lucia Capital Group. We're going to start the hour off with a discussion on tax brackets. Okay, now, we didn't even get to start the basics of this topic the last time we tried to cover it. So today, we're going to at least try to get to some of the things that we weren't able to talk about last time. And of course, it's important to understand this as we approach tax season. They're coming up on the 18th, right? They're due on the 18th. So what is that? Yep. That's like 12 or so days away today, right? Yeah. So anyway, even though you have a few extra days to do it, it's creeping up on us. It's important to understand how these tax brackets work so that you either don't get stuck with too high a tax bill, which can happen, or so you don't defer too much income. That could be a problem too. Maybe you decided to push your bonus into next year because you're afraid that it would raise your tax bill too much. We've seen people do that. You know, whatever the case, we're going to help you out with more wealth education this hour. Now, in addition to that, we're going to have Steve Alladort, our loan financial planner. Usually he's here on Tuesdays. He's coming in today on Wednesday. He'll be here to talk about mortgage rates, which they've come down just a little bit recently, sort of surprising. And he's also going to talk about some low down payment programs for purchases, and there are some minimum or minimal equity programs for refinances. So that's coming up. Stick around. We'll talk about that shortly. That'll be about 21 after the hour. All right, our phone lines are all open right now. If you want to give us a call, 877-PLANNER, 877-752-6637. Brain Trust standing by. You can also email us via our website, wealthed.com. That, of course, is your source for all the topics we talk about on this show. You can look for the Find Your Answer link near the top of the page. So we got Professor Rick Plum, once again, certified financial planner. You can get in touch with him or anyone at Lucia Capital Group at the off-air number if you want to talk off the air, 800-644-1150. I'll remind you that your financial plan should be tailored to suit your individual needs, your goals, which is why you need to speak with a Brain Trust advisor. They will devise a plan that can work for you. No two situations are ever alike, and you can find out what the advisors at Lucia Capital Group can do for you. Just give them a call, 800-644-1150 at the off-air number. On the air, important number to remember, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R, 877-752-6637. We got Professor Rick Plum here live once again. So yeah, tax time's upon us, and I still find that there's a lot of misinformation out there. Maybe it's not misinformation. Maybe it's just assumptions people are making about tax brackets, Professor Plum, because you hear, well, I'm in the 25% tax bracket, which means that I made $100,000 gross last year, and $25,000 of that went away into nothing.
Or the bigger one is, you know, that bonus is actually going to cost me more in taxes than I get as a bonus. So if I get a $1,000 bonus, my taxes are going to go up by more than $1,000 because I'm going to go into another bracket. And it's just going to, you know, you go from the 15% bracket to 25. That's just, I can't afford to do that. Well, that's not how the tax situation in the U.S. works. It is progressive. We do start off at a low bracket for the first income that we receive, and it will progressively get more for the new dollars that show up on our tax return. But it doesn't go retroactive. It doesn't make the first dollars at the low bracket higher tax just because you went into another bracket. They're like individual little pockets of calculations. And that's actually the way it works. There's lots of little calculations that go on. Now, if you're looking at your tax booklet and you make less than $65,000, $80,000 a year, you can look up a table in your tax booklet and say, my taxable income is X, therefore my tax is Y. They've already done all the math for you on that booklet. But if you wanted to try to figure out where you are on your own, you have to have a little bit of an understanding about how the brackets work and what actual income is even applied to the brackets. Mm-hmm. We have gross income, we have adjusted gross income, we have taxable income, we have deductions, standard deduction, personal exemptions, itemized deductions, all this stuff that gets put into the blender of the tax return, and somehow a number comes out the bottom that says, you owe this. Well, if that's how you look at it, there's no way to actually manage and plan for what's happening with your tax brackets, with your tax bill. And right now, a lot of people are looking at it saying, how do I change my tax bill? My son is getting married this year, and he wanted to know, can I change my withholding on my tax return so that I can get a little bit bigger check every week or every however often he's paid? And so he's looking into managing his tax bracket because of a significant change in his life coming up where they have a different set of brackets than he had when he was a single individual. So how do you use the brackets and the fact that we are going to owe taxes? How do we use these issues either to our advantage or at least not to our detriment?
Yeah, now you talked about something that we should explain. When somebody puts off their $2,000, $1,000 bonus or whatever because they're afraid it will put them, let's say they're at the, they're making $74,500.
Taxable income.
Taxable income.
After all deductions and exemptions.
Exactly. And so that's at the very top of the bracket. And then you
they get another $1,000 bonus. That they didn't realize they were going to get.
Exactly.
Oh, no, $1,000 bonus. That means that I was going to owe, $5,000 in taxes. Now I'm going to owe $7,000 in taxes?
Right.
It doesn't work that way.
So here's what I want to do. We got some callers to take. I want to get to these before we get to, we got Steve Aldert coming up here at 21 after. That question, write that down because we're going to answer that question after the bottom of the hour. All right? But don't let me forget because I tend to do things like this.
Forget?
I live for the moment.
What were we talking about?
And at the moment, we've got a couple of calls. I want to take care of these before we get to the break. 877-PLANNER. Let's see. Let's go to Tom first in Las Vegas, Nevada. Hello, Tom.
Hello?
Yeah,
hello.
Hi, Tom.
How you doing?
Good. How are you today?
All right. My question is on a IMB. Does the Internal Revenue Service notify you when you have to take it out?
Oh, no. Not at all. Well, they've notified you through when you signed up. If you ever read all the little tiny verbiage that goes along with an IRA application, it does say something to the fact that once you reach 70 and a half, you have required minimum distributions. You've heard that you have required minimum distributions. In many cases, the IRA custodian will mail something out to you saying, hey, you're turning 70 and a half this year. You have a required minimum distribution from this account. Do you want us to calculate it and just send you the money, or how do you want to handle this? And so there are, you may learn about it from many different sources, but when you get to 70 and a half or older, the IRS is not contacting you saying, hey, Tom, don't forget you've got a required minimum distribution. They don't do that. The IRA custodian may, but the IRS definitely does not.
So I have to take it out on my own.
It's your responsibility, yes. How old are you, Tom?
Right. 70.
When do you turn 70 and a half? Are you just turned 70?
Yeah, just turned 70.
Okay, so you'll be 70 and a half this year at some point during this year. Right. So that means this year, 2016, is your first required minimum distribution year. And so you have to do a calculation. It's pretty easy. You were saying?
What is the calculation?
You have to go through your IRAs as of 12/31/15. So you get the balance from all of it. Now, do you have 401ks or just IRAs?
Just IRAs.
So you're going to look at the balance of your IRAs, all total and of all your IRAs, as of 12/31/2015, the end of last year. And you're going to take that number and you're going to divide it by a life expectancy that the IRS has given us. For you, it's 27.5. The balance divided by the life expectancy for the age that you will reach this year, age 70 was the age you reached this year, gives you your required minimum distribution. It's a little under 4%. And so, now you've got this number. You know what the required minimum distribution is. You may have 3, 4, 5 different IRAs. It doesn't matter which account, which one of your IRAs the money comes out of, it just matters that that amount of money comes out.
Right.
Now, if for some reason you do not want to do it this year, this is your very first required minimum distribution. And the very first required minimum distribution, and only the first required minimum distribution, can actually be postponed until the first quarter of next year. But the only time that really makes a lot of sense is if you're working this year and you're going to quit at the end of the year, you're in a high bracket this year and you'll be in a lower bracket next year. Because while you can postpone taking this year's, the 2016 required minimum distribution, and take it in the first quarter of 2017, you cannot postpone the 2017 RMD. So you end up taking two required minimum distributions next year if you postpone the first one.
Okay. I'm fully retired.
Good. Okay, then, you know, and it doesn't matter that you're not 70 and a half yet. This is the year you turn 70 and a half. This is the year you have a required minimum distribution. Any distribution taken at any time during this year from your IRAs qualifies as a required minimum distribution.
Well, it counts toward the required minimum distribution. You just have to make sure you take the get to that minimum number.
You got to take enough out.
Right.
Whether you did it January 2nd or December 31st, it doesn't matter. Get it done this year.
Yeah, you just have to get it done sometime this
year.
Don't
wait until the end of the year.
Nah, it's not as good. Tom, I got to take a break. If you have some more questions, hold on. We can talk to you more off the air. Required minimum distributions, RMDs, and anything else that's on your mind. 877-PLANNER. We'll excuse Professor Plum for just a segment as we bring Steve Allendorf, our loan financial planner, in talking about mortgage rates, etc. when we come back on Bucket Strategy Investing. Well, I'll tell you what, it's a day late, but that's all right. You know, we do this whenever we can, and this happens to be the day we bring in our loan financial planner, Steve Allendorf, here from Skyline. Mortgage? I'm so used to saying the other one.
Well, me too.
Skyline. What's it called?
I still say Rancho Financial.
Rancho
Financial doing business is Skyline, one and the same.
Yeah, it's been years. All right. Well, these old habits die hard.
They
but
do.
He's still got his same address. It's loan, L-O-A-N, financialplanner.com. Loanfinancialplanner.com. There's a reason he's a loan financial planner. Is that just a broker, somebody who just handles somebody's, you know, loan and says, here, next, get out? No, there's an actual planning process. We're going to talk a little bit about that. But first, I understand that you've somehow lowered rates.
No, rates. Just magically, I just said, guys, we need to get the rates a little bit lower.
You waved your hand and made it so.
Right hand, not the left hand. I don't know why.
Oh,
the left
sorry.
Hand doesn't
okay.
work.
Left
but anyways,
hand, all right.
Actually, interest rates have gone down over the last couple of weeks. 30-year fixed rates as low as. And remember, rates are different for every scenario.
Of course, yes.
But in the 0 to maybe 0.5 point range, conforming loan 3.6. 7-year fixed was at 3.3 about 2 or 3 weeks ago. I'm seeing now right around 3%. 15-year at 2.8, but you know what we think about the 15-year.
I don't think much of it.
If you have a low mortgage balance, great. There's not that much of a difference
right.
Between going from a 30 to a 15. But
right.
in areas like California, New York, high-priced areas on a $300,000-$500,000 mortgage, that could be a $500 or $600 difference in payment.
Yes.
And if something happens, there's no safety net, as far as my feeling.
You owe the money.
On a 15-year loan.
Right.
Jumbo loans, 30 to 40% down. Not everybody has 30 to 40% down
Understood,
on a purchase.
Yeah.
30 to 40% down, high credit, 3.3. On a jumbo 30-year loan. Unbelievable.
Fixed. That's
so
fixed.
If you're looking at purchasing, you've got a jumbo loan based on your area above the conforming balance, give me a call. These rates are phenomenal. And the 7-year, 2.75.
That's on the jumbo again.
Correct, and on a purchase, where we get our best rates. Rates, of course, will be a little bit higher for refinances.
Of course, yeah.
Government loans, still hovering between 3.25 and 3.6.
VA, those kind of things, yep. Mm-hmm.
VA, FHA, based on the loan amount, based on conforming or high balance, based on whether you're going VA or FHA.
Yeah, I understand that when we talk about these, as you just said, that rates are going to be different depending on your circumstances. But
purchase rate
under,
and term, cash out, credit scores.
Exactly.
So when you hear ads on the radio, you see things on the internet, it's potentially not going to be the rate you're going to get. And just as important, and we've talked about this, it's not always about getting the lowest rate. For instance, I heard an ad yesterday, 30-year loan, 3.5% with an APR of 3.9. Now, APR is something we're required to do. It's to me, it tells the borrower nothing other than the fact if the APR is significantly higher than the rate, you're paying some points and some fees.
Of course.
Bottom line is you want to look at the rate range based on your scenario and loan costs. Are you paying points? Are you not paying points? Are you not paying fees? We can then do a calculation based on the loan amount we're setting up, what you're paying in interest on those different rates, what you're paying in fees on those different rates.
Because those add up too.
Mathematically, we can come up with what I call a payback, and that gives us black and white. Does it make sense to go to a lower rate and pay fees? Does it make sense to do a no-point loan? Does it make sense to do a no-cost loan?
Exactly.
So it takes the guessing game out of it.
It does. And then you'll know, too, hey, maybe I can do a 7-year loan.
Exactly.
All right. So before we run out of time, we've got different programs for people with low down payments.
Yeah. First, I want to mention that it's been a while, but in the last 2 months, I've had 3 HARP loans. Now, what are HARP loans? HARP loans are for borrowers that have a Fannie or Freddie Mac mortgage mm-hmm. that was originated prior to May 31st, 2008. So people, I think, are just going, wait a second, I've got value coming back. Not that they really needed it, because with the HARP loans, we can do it with LTVs above 100%. But we could also do HARP loans with loan-to-values at 50%. The advantage of HARP loans, of course, for those people with higher loan-to-values, there's no mortgage insurance on the HARP loan if you don't currently have mortgage insurance. The other thing is qualifying. 2 of the HARP loans that I'm doing, debt-to-income ratio, both borrowers, around 65%. You can't get an approval, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, or on a government loan at a 65% debt-to-income ratio.
You need to explain that quickly for people who aren't.
That's basically, you take your house payment, your total debt, you add those up and divide it by your gross income. Mm-hmm. Standard Fannie Freddie is going to be 45 to 50%. Standard government is going to be between 45 and 55%. If you're going to a jumbo lender, max is 43%.
They don't want to see more than that.
Correct.
Right.
But with the HARP loan, there's a lot more flexibility as far as loan qualifying.
Well, and hence the reason for HARP to exist in the first place.
Correct.
Right?
Exactly.
Yes. Otherwise, it doesn't help anybody. Okay. So what are we looking at? Some purchase. You don't have a lot of down payment, let's say.
We've talked. VA is a great vehicle because if you have your VA eligibility, you could potentially do 100% financing up to the max limits in your area. Okay. Every area is different. If you're above those max limits, then you only have to bring in 25% of the difference. So let's say the max limit, I'm just going to use a number, is $400,000, and you need to set up where you have a $500,000 purchase. We can do the loan at $400,000. We're $100,000 over at $500,000. 25% of that $100,000 is $25,000. So that would be just the minimum down payment on a $500,000 purchase.
Oh.
With VA, if you've never used your VA before, 2.15% is a premium that they'll add to the loan amount. If you've used VA before, it's 3.3%. If you have at least 10% VA disability, there is no funding fee. And if you have an existing VA loan and you're looking to do what's called a streamline, then you're only looking at a half a point on the funding fee. But the beauty on these loans is, let's say you have a first in or a line of credit, a first credit card, car loans, and you want to be able to significantly reduce your loan balances and your payments. We can go up to 95 to 100% on that type of loan, which would be considered a cash out loan,
right?
With VA. You're not gonna find 95 to 100% cash out on any other loan program.
How is it VA can do this?
It's
veterans, government, and
correct,
they can
and
they can
veterans make their payments. There's very, very small deficiencies with VA loans. So borrowers, still decent income, still have to qualify, decent credit, but VA loans are real attractive. Other than VA, you've got FHA, 3.5% down.
Yes.
FHA is a great program, not only for having a low down payment, but interest rates are lower on FHA loans. So even though there's mortgage insurance on FHA loans,
yes,
the rates on FHA loans are maybe 3/8 to a half a point
lower. Does it offset that often?
Not completely, except if you have a lower credit score.
Oh.
So if you have a lower credit score, the rate that you would get on a conventional loan would be just about the same rate as you would on an FHA loan with the mortgage insurance.
Right, okay.
But even if you've got higher credit scores, if it allows you to get into a home with minimal down payment, with a VA loan, or sorry, with an FHA loan, many times we can help with some or all of your closing costs. So there's some real advantages with FHA if it fits your scenario properly.
And there are ways to do that. You can talk to Steve Allendorf off the air if you want some more information at this. Loan, L-O-A-N, loanfinancialplanner.com. That's his website. Or contact him directly, 888-563-1070. Ask about some of these. We didn't get to the refi.
We'll go over a few other ones, the conventionals and some jumbos with low down payment and no mortgage insurance. Yeah.
Steve, thanks very much. We'll talk to you next week. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, coming back on Bucket Strategy Investing. Show just getting underway? Here we are. We're back. Okay, welcome back to the program. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. 877-PLANNER is our number. P-L-A-N-N-E-R. Talking to you about your money here for the next half hour. Well, for the rest of this hour. We got another hour coming up as well. And we talk about your money not just on this program, but in person as well. You should really think about it because coming up this Saturday, I want to remind the people in Houston, Texas, this Saturday, April 9th, there's another 2016 Retirement Income Strategies Workshop put on by the folks at Lucia Capital Group. You can register right now at wealtheds.com, our website, wealth, W-E-A-L-T-H, wealtheds.com. Meet Professor Plum, meet Terry Keyes, who is our other brain trust advisor here. In fact, you're going to hear and see Terry on this program sometime late next week as Professor Plum is doing something. I don't know what he's doing.
I'm doing very little, just not coming in here.
I thought you were writing checks and all that.
A few, not as many as the other gentleman involved because he's the father of the bride.
All right, okay. So there's a wedding coming up for next week for Professor. But anyway that
not
that,
for me, but
no. I understand. Yes,
closely related.
Closely related, right? The next generation down. But keep in mind this Saturday. Now you're going to be in Houston, Texas. You're going to be talking with all the folks in Houston.
This weekend.
A good turnout in Houston. If you want to join the Brain Trust, you go to wealtheds.com. It's all free. Wealtheds.com. Learn about some of the retirement income strategies that we talk about on this program. What's the big, what is generally the bigger, is there any big topic in Houston that tends to reign supreme there when we're there? I know in different cities you have sometimes like annuities in Phoenix, you got, you know.
We get a pretty good mix of questions out there. We do get some annuity questions from time to time, a little bit of tax, real estate from time to time, a little social security. I mean, but it runs the gamut out there. It's not focused. Like a lot of Phoenix tends to be very index annuity oriented because
right. There's
a lot of advertising for it. We go up to the Bay Area. They have a lot of real estate questions because it's just so expensive.
The San Francisco Bay Area, they've had that for years. And it started, as I recall, when we started going up there in the late 90s.
Yes.
I mean, it's always been kind of expensive there. But you recall during the dot-com boom.
It was ridiculous.
And we would get questions from people in the Bay Area of California about, well, I have an 800-square-foot place. I think I can get $1 million for it.
It's a fixer-upper. It does have bars on the windows. And the road noise is a little loud because it's right next to the freeway. But I think I can get, $1 million
for it. Yeah, I might only be able to get $1 million. I'm hoping if I hold out a couple more months, we'll get $1 million too. And that's the kind of stuff that we used to get. Okay, but anyway, besides that, you can get your questions answered. You can ask all of your questions of Professor Plum, meet him in person, and learn all about some of these retirement income strategies that we talk about on this show. So that's it. This Saturday, I'll keep reminding you because I'm just a couple of days away, April 9th in Houston, Texas. Okay, 877-PLANNER. I'm going to get to this question. I hadn't forgotten about it. Believe it or not,
wow.
We had said why some people get a bonus, but they want to defer it later on because they believe that based on where their income is, that's going to put them into, which is true, it could put them
into a higher tax bracket.
Into from the 15% bracket to the 25% bracket simply with the addition of a small bonus. Some folks don't want to take their bonus. They say, well, don't pay me this year. Do it next year and we'll worry about it. That may not necessarily be a good idea. Okay, let's take a couple of calls. 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. Let's move next to Michael, I'm told, in Littleton, Colorado. Hi, Michael.
Good morning.
Hi, what's up?
Hi. All right, I have a special situation. I'm a senior citizen, 86 years old.
All right.
I have a great-granddaughter that is living with me, and my income is strictly from Social Security and from her father giving me a stipend every month.
Okay.
My net income is about $30,000. So what I'd like to know is, can I file taxes and claim head of household and things like that and get a refund?
Well, how much is your Social Security?
My combined Social Security with my great-granddaughter, because her mother had passed away, is $1,900 a month.
Okay, but your granddaughter's Social Security is her own Social Security. It's not part of your taxable world.
So mine would be $14,000.
$14,000. So you must have some pensions or other income from other sources. The money the father's giving you is a gift, right?
No, it's for child care or whatever you want to call it.
So it's taxable to you?
I don't know. That's what I'm asking.
Well, I've never actually seen this where the father, who is alive, is giving money to the grandfather. I mean, I've seen it where they're giving money to help raise a child, but I've never seen it where it's an obligation, like a divorce decree or something. That I've never seen. But do you even owe taxes?
No.
So if you...
I don't think so. I mean, I think I'm just above that $26,000 limit because of my age, so...
Right, but you know, you've got $14,000 of Social Security, so that means you have another $10,000, $13,000 from other sources, right?
Right.
So that means that none of your Social Security is taxable, and so you may be paying taxes on like $1,000, $2,000. I would want to look at your tax return, but I don't know that you're paying much, if anything, in the way of taxes.
I'm not paying anything at the moment.
Okay, so why would taking her as a dependent help you? You can't get back more. I mean, I guess you could try to qualify as some kind of an earned... Well, you're not looking for a job. I'm not sure that it's going to help you to take her as a dependent. You would have to go down and talk to somebody at the senior center about, you know, having them rerun your tax return as if... Now, are you providing more than half of the support for your great-great-granddaughter?
Yes.
And is how old is your great-great-granddaughter?
Great-granddaughter.
16.
16?
Yeah.
Does she have a job?
Not yet. No.
Okay.
She's looking.
So there is the chance that you can take her as a dependent, and there may be the chance that if you take her as a dependent, there could be some type of credit, you know, for a child tax credit or something of that nature that could be refundable, as long as nobody else is taking her as a dependent. Is there anybody else claiming her as a dependent? Is her father claiming her as a dependent?
No.
So I would go down to the local senior center where they do taxes and ask them to rerun your tax return as if you were had a household with your great-granddaughter as a dependent and see if it triggers any credits that can be refunded to you to create some extra money for helping you take care of your granddaughter, great-granddaughter.
All right. All right, good.
Yeah, that's because you don't owe any taxes. The only hope you have of getting more money back is if there's a credit. A refundable credit that comes back your way, and I'm not sure if there is one, but the senior center will do it for you for free, probably.
All right, thank you. I appreciate that.
Good luck, sir.
Okay, Michael, thank you for the call. So his situation is that he's 86. He's on Social Security. He's not getting a lot, but now his great granddaughter is getting some because she is now part of the child in care.
Well, no, her mother passed, so she's receiving a.
The
dependents benefit from her late mother.
Yes.
And the dad, for whatever reason, is not raising her. The great-grandfather is raising her. And so the dad's given great-grandpa money to help him raise her, but I can't imagine how that's a taxable event coming to grandpa, great-grandpa.
I can't either.
I mean, it's not a divorce decree. It's not a legal
As far as he knows. Now, he's wondering if that was taxable in any way.
I don't know how it would be, but then this is a strange situation, so I don't know. I've never heard of a parent being required to pay some kind of but child support isn't tax deductible anyway. It's not alimony. Alimony is what would be a taxable event.
Yes.
So child support, I mean, if you have a divorced couple and one is forced to pay child support, not alimony, but child support, that is not a deductible item for the person paying it or a taxable item for the person receiving it. Only alimony is. And so this, I don't see how any of the money that's being gifted from the dad to the great-grandfather, the grandfather in this case, would be a taxable event. So he doesn't owe, Michael does not owe any taxes. So the only question is, are there some refundable credits that he would be eligible for if he can claim his great-granddaughter as a dependent on his return, and therefore he becomes a head of household. He may get the child tax credit, but I don't know if that is the child tax credit refundable. I don't know.
Can you? I can look it up. How do you set up a mix minus on an audio board?
You take the credit and you apply it to the.
There you go. Okay. All right.
You know everything else. At least you tell me during the breaks you do.
You caught me off guard with that one. And if you don't, I don't know that. I will have to look that one up. So anyway. Okay, so but I want to ask you this very quickly, because you had caught this. The mom in this case had passed away. So the survivor's benefit is now going toward the minor child in this case.
Yes.
Which it can do. How does this work?
Well, if you have a dependent, if you have a child and that's under the age of 18, just like they, if you're retired and receiving a retirement benefit, the child can get a benefit. There's also a survivor benefit for children when a parent dies, unfortunately, way too young. And as long as the child's under 18 or still in high school, 19 at the latest, they are eligible for a survivor benefit from a parent that passed away. The amount is equal to 75% of what the parent basically had earned up to that point. That's a rough estimation, but it's in the ballpark. So if they had earned a retirement benefit of $2,000, I'm making that number up, given the way they calculate it, the child would be receiving $1,500. Now, there's a family maximum, so if you have 10 kids, they're not each going to get $1,500.
Yeah.
You know, they'd be all split down. But so this child is receiving something from the late mom. It is their only income, which means it won't be taxable. So there's no tax.
And they can
on that.
Do what they want with it?
Usually it's paid to the caregiver.
Okay. All right. That's good. That'll help. All right. 877-PLANNER. More coming up. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. Don't go away. Bucket Strategy Investing. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. We still have a lot of things to talk about. Are you admiring the bump or what?
I'm just cracking up about the bump, yeah.
Okay, all right. I figured you would. 877-PLANNER if you want to get on board right now. 877-752-6637. We still do have a couple of lines open. We have some other stuff earlier in the hour that I brought up that we will still talk about. If not this segment, then we'll bring it up next segment. All right, so stick around. 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. Let's move along to Martin, who has called us back out of Las Vegas, Nevada. Hello, Martin.
Yeah, how you doing?
Good. What's up?
I have a question. I'm doing my taxes, and I'm just wondering about that. I don't know if you're familiar with that form 1095-B that comes from the employer.
Right. There's a 1095-A, B, and C.
Does that form have to be sent in with the taxes?
No, actually, the B and C forms do not. You just have to keep it in your records. If you received a 1095-A because you were receiving a subsidy through one of the health exchanges, then you would have to wait to get that and file it with your return. But the B is just a declaration that you did have health insurance the whole time. You didn't receive any subsidies, and you're not asking for any subsidies from the health exchanges, are you?
No, I'm not.
Right, so this is just an informational portion of the return, the 1095-B and C.
Okay, so it doesn't have to be a sent in?
No.
Mm-hmm. And what, as far as everybody is, because everybody has to be covered. I mean, as far as the family, if I'm claiming a dependence, they have to be on this form.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, everybody in the family has to be covered.
Okay.
One way or right. another,
or you face a penalty. Now, whether it's covered okay. through you or covered through some other source, they have to be covered.
They have to be covered.
Is that what's okay. your situation, Martin?
Well, no, my situation, I was taking care of, I was responsible for my granddaughter, and she's not covered under here, under my insurance policy.
Well, is she a dependent of yours, or is she just living with you?
No, she's, I'm supporting her, so I was going to claim her as a dependent, but she's not covered under in my insurance, so I'm just wondering.
Are you the legal guardian?
No.
Then she's probably, should be claimed by the legal guardian under their health insurance. Who's her legal guardian?
That's my daughter.
Your daughter should be the one providing the health insurance to her. This is something you're going to have to talk about. If you're working, you can talk to your health coverage carrier about covering somebody who's living in your household. But I don't know if you're going to be able to. You're taking the dependent deduction, but I don't know if you have to be the legal guardian of the individual to be able to put them on your health insurance in your area. So you may want to talk to your health coverage carrier about that.
Okay. And one more question. I didn't catch all of you. You were talking a couple of days ago about what basis means and the terminology and all that, certain words.
Yeah.
Right.
I was wondering if I'm going to hang up right now, but I'm going to keep listening to radio. I was wondering if you can go over that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
We can probably do it right now. So,
okay,
sure. Why not? Did you have any specific question, or you just want to know all about how it works?
how it works. Especially
okay.
You're talking about bases and some other terminology you were using.
Right. And we can, it all goes towards, you know, it's a term for taxation is what we're talking about. And there's different types of bases.
Bases. Yes.
Yeah, the first bases, second bases, third.
Okay. Yes.
There's different types of bases.
Yes. Okay. So let's start. Martin, you can hang on, or you can. It's up to you if you just want to listen in. We'll talk about this right now. Let's explain what we mean when we say that.
Well, basis. When we're talking about somebody's basis in an investment, we're talking about the starting point for determining gain or loss from a tax perspective. And so it has to do with pretty much what I paid for it. So if I buy a piece of raw land for $100,000, my basis in that property is $100,000. If 5 years goes by and I sell it for $150,000, my basis is $100. That's my starting point for determining gain or loss. I sold it for $150, but I had to pay $5,000 in broker fees and other things. So I really netted $145. So I take the $145 minus my basis, and I come up with $45,000 worth of gain. So my gain in this situation is $45,000. That's what goes on my tax return as a taxable event. But maybe in the 5 years, I've spent $15,000 and I built a shack on it, or I built a garage or something on it. And then I rented it out. And over the period of time that I rented it, you know, so when I built the shack, it went up by $15,000, my basis. But every year that I rented it out on paper, I depreciated it. So basis is not just what I paid for it if it's real estate and other things that have depreciable assets on it. But it, from an accountant's standpoint, it's basically the starting point for determining gain or loss. With stocks, it's a little bit easier.
That's what I'm going to say. Let's use stocks as an example. You buy a stock for $10. Let's say you own one share of a stock.
Let's say I buy a mutual fund for $10,000.
Oh, all right, fine.
Well, it's because it's going to be easier to add.
I get it. Yeah, that's fine.
And so my start, if I sell it, you know, a couple of weeks later for $11,000, somehow I get really lucky. My basis in it, what I paid for it, was $10,000. I sold it for $11,000, and so I have a $1,000 gain. I held it for less than a year, it's a short-term gain. If I held it for more than a year, it's a long-term gain. But let's say I put that $10,000 in and I forget about it. And after the first year, the fund did okay, but it issued interest or dividends and capital gains that happened inside the fund. There was a distribution, and the distribution was reinvested into more shares. The distribution was $500. I am supposed to put that $500 distribution as a taxable event on my tax return. If you don't do your own taxes, you probably didn't even notice that you did it. And you just went on your tax return and just everything washed out at the bottom. You either paid what you paid or you got back what you got back. You didn't even know you reinvested the money. But now, because $500 was reinvested into the fund, my basis is $10,000 that I started with plus $500 that was reinvested. $10,500 is my new basis. And each year, it pays interest, it pays dividends, or whatever the case may be, and it's reinvested. Every time I have a reinvested dividend that it was declared as a distribution and I put it on my tax return and it gets reinvested, whether I take the money out and put it in my bank account, write them a check back for the amount of money, or they just automatically reinvest it, that reinvested interest, reinvested dividend increases my basis. So I may have paid $10,000 for the fund 10 years ago and I never looked at it again and I didn't pay attention to anything that was happening with it, and it's now worth $25,000. I probably do not have $15,000 worth of gain in it. Unfortunately, that's what a lot of people think. And because up until 2012, there was nobody keeping track of the basis but you.
And you probably weren't either.
A lot of people paid too much in taxes on their investments because they didn't they didn't add the basis back in as they were increase their basis as they were doing reinvested dividends.
All right, that's some of the talk on basis. We can get into it maybe more.
And IRAs have basis too, but not in the same way.
Okay, well, you know, we're out of time. If you need the brain trust, Professor Plum, off the air, 800-644-1150. That's the number at Lucia Capital Group, 800-644-1150. Another hour just ahead. Stick around. Don't go away.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities, LLC, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities, LLC. In the information presented, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.